You're now listening to My Sunday Morning Tech, the show where we dive into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and everything else in between to help you make sense of how it works around you. From 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. every Sunday. Want to take a trip through history's major events or explore interesting geographical features and even some interesting scientific developments? Well, join us on My Sunday Morning Take every Sunday morning from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. where we look into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and everything else to help you understand what is happening in the world. And yes, those were some pretty lovely tunes, specifically the second one, coming through from the duo known as Loaded Honey with the song Don't Speak. Before that, it was a little bit of Richard Ashcroft with A Fly to the Sun that you also heard through right there. Welcoming you this morning, dear listeners, as you obviously know, during the period of 5 to 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, you're in my company here on my Sunday morning take. And yes, we obviously take a look at those particular interesting discussions, whether they are fueled from events of the week or fueled from particular discussions that not pop up, but rather sort of like resurface, in the sense that it either has a particular impact or it is some sort of anniversary, component to look into. I'll tell you this, description or comment on the side scenario, that when we did the 3 January discussion earlier this year, primarily after the 3 January that happened literally this year, it actually coincided, and it was a complete coincidence, between 3 January of this year, 2026, and 3 January of 1990, or was it 1989, the arrest of Noriega, primarily because in both scenarios, there was a sense of, let me say that there was a sense of betrayal, to be honest. And this is obviously as we are heading into, or we have just completed the second week of the Iran conflict. Not that many people, bother with the counting, but the counting is significant primarily to identify how long this particular conflict scenario is. So far they are just sending missiles to each other. The loudest noise is obviously coming through from the likes of the Americans and the Europeans, who are trying to understand what is actually going on and what particular perspectives obviously are being cited, primarily regarding the conflict. Yeah, and some other particular interesting moves are happening. Now, on the notion of moves and on the notion of developments in terms of the sequence of events that you're seeing, not developments in the aspect of our conventional conversation that we've always had here on Eagle FM, which has been primarily based on Namibia's development and the development avenues and the particular policies that are obviously associated to said particular developments. No, we're talking about the developments that is happening as we are sitting here, as we are all here engaging on the Sunday morning session, primarily because, yes, the downside is, by the moment we go to bed, which was yesterday, or last night, the Americans obviously are hard, busy with work, because it's, their Saturday was only taking full swing. I think it's not only now nighttime, their side. And obviously a whole raft of things could have potentially popped off in between, since when we went to bed last night. And guys, I went to bed literally at 11, last night. Thinking that you've got to be awake at 4 a.m. obviously to prepare to be here. It's almost like there is some sort of, the English word technically would be that you just feel some sort of unease because of this particular conflict, because in the past 14 days of this conflict, I'll be honest, and this is primarily based upon the analysis that other international relations and economic experts have also observed, is that the only, I don't want to say non-rational, but the only person, the only entity, the only party who is acting the most unpredictable is unfortunately the United States. Primarily because the concentration of power has been consolidated in the past year to be around Donald Trump and the decision-making that Donald Trump makes. For example, I'll throw you up a little bit of a talking point, just something for you to mull about. Now, our conversation for today, dear listeners, actually analyzes all said events that you have seen since last year into this year. The scary thing is, Donald Trump actually made these announcements back in his campaign running, you know, during 2024, 2023, that he is going to do and he is aiming for a particular another conflict with Iran. This is not an unpredictable event. I was actually hoping that he would not pick a fight. To be in my particular, you know, own perspective, I was hoping he was not going to pick a fight with Iran. But after I kept hearing for the past 2 years from the leading economist, the leading development economist, Jeffrey Sachs, and Sachs mentioned this not last, was it last year? He mentioned it last year and he mentioned it the year before, but last year he was at another particular, another particular Middle Eastern conference, somewhere in either in Dubai or it was either in Qatar, regarding the discussion of, you know, what he's hearing going on in Washington, specifically with the moves, the rhetoric, the actions, and other particular sort of like developments popping up regarding global conflict. Now, our conversation for this morning is based upon literally an analytical field of study that looks at what international relations technically consists of today. Now, in broad, and you know, in broad speaking, when we here on Eagle FM have always looked at international relations, we've looked at the, you know, the past events, analyzing who did what, up to what stage, when, where, who were the participants, why did they do this, and what were some of the other particular, you know, factors. But, then this is where things become a big B-U-T, a but. Sachs himself mentioned in 2024, in a particular interview, he did a whole bunch of interviews across the world, because I was very intrigued with what he was saying at the time primarily, but he was giving us a particular warning. Back in 2024, at various particular platforms, he cited in his discussions how international, how foreign policy in the United States is currently, and I'm talking about currently since 2000, the year 2000 was actually adapted, or was actually introduced to me in one of his online lectures, the Professor Jiang that I've mentioned during the course of the weeks, and specifically in the course of the home run engagements with Helmut, about the aspect of game theory. Now, Sachs was the first guy to keep mentioning game theory is being applied in foreign policy by the United States, and that game theory has a whole bunch of analysis that goes into it in order to identify who, meaning which of the major countries in the discussion at the time of 2024 leading into 2025, who has what interests. And by identifying said interests, what are the possible moves and the possible developments that can emanate from these particular interests? Now, we are talking about, for this morning, about game theory. Reading up on game theory in my own particular time and preparation for this morning's discussion has actually led me down a little bit of a rabbit hole. Game theory, according to the literature in front of me, is based upon a mathematical calculation. Now, I've got limited exposure to probability, and obviously that was still when I was doing, when I was still in the line of, you know, business and commerce, specific from educational point, leading into the realm of actual business and commerce development. But when you switch over to journalism, journalism then just becomes purely, you know, humanities perspective, even though you can report upon scientific and commerce activities and other particular scenarios that form or opposition around us, the humans. You don't get to so much to look into theories in journalism. You don't get that much, you don't get that much opportunity to look into theories. You can go and read up on a theory in order to understand what a specific speaker was talking about, which I had to do specifically with Jeffrey Sachs. But then during the course of this week, I mentioned to Helmut on one of the home run shows that the particular situation taking place that we are seeing in the global international relations stage is a scary thing when you look specifically at 2 years, a year back, at what one lecturer, he's a Canadian lecturer, but his parents were Chinese immigrants to Canada, he's a Canadian lecturer, Professor Jiang Xueqin. He works in the United States. And his literal field of study and what he literally specializes in and what he teaches is game theory. Now, I thought this was, if you off the cuff, you sometimes assume this is probably about, you know, game technology, you know, playing games. No. And you probably would also think that, is this commercial strategy? Because in the United States and in Europe, specifically in the United States, they try to teach you commerce and business administration through a sense of strategic thinking. Now, the strategic thinking discussion is usually based upon the ability of gaining access towards, you know, business strategies. What strategies of the business exist out there? Game theory in its own right is a scary thing. It is scary and it's both exciting from my perspective. Being that specifically when you've got to look at what great game theory is, the basic explanation that exists is that it's a branch of applied mathematics that provides tools for analyzing situations in which parties, which are called the players, make decisions that are interdependent. These interdependencies cause each player to consider the other player's possible moves or strategies in formulating strategy. A solution to a game describes the optimal decisions of the players who may have similar, opposed, or mixed interests, and the outcomes that may result from these decisions. Now I'll pause it there. Jeffrey Sachs himself, back in 2024, highlighted that when foreign policy is based upon game theory, he described, Sachs himself, that the concerning thing for him was that, and I'm just paraphrasing, obviously, what he said back then in 2024, the concerning thing for him was that they were looking at game theory from a particular perspective whereby they were assuming the other side, that's now the American policymakers, the foreign policy makers or developers, were assuming that the other parties, meaning the other player or players, would not react, or they would just allow an action to occur. I didn't think much of it back then, because Sachs already sort of like concluded that statement, that sentence in those particular video conference interviews that he gave from Neutrality Studies to his friend John Mearsheimer, to who's the other guy? There was another guy also that interviewed Sachs, and he, because he kept referencing the same particular discussion. Now he notes that game theory is at the basis of American foreign policy development. Game theory, in its historical sense, can be and has been used to analyze parlor games. Its applications are much broader. In fact, game theory was originally developed by a Hungarian-born American mathematician, John von Neumann, and his Princeton University colleague, Oscar Morgenstern, who was a German-born American economist, to solve problems in economics. Now, in their book that they jointly wrote in 1944, The Theory of Games and Economic Behavior, von Neumann and Morgenstern asserted that the mathematics developed for physical sciences, which describes the workings of disinterested nature, was a poor model for economics. They observed that economics is much like a game wherein players anticipate each other's moves and therefore requires a new kind of mathematics, which they then called game theory. Game theory was further developed in the 1950s by the American mathematician John Nash, who then established that mathematical principles of game theory, and that it became a branch of mathematics that examines the rivalries between competitors with mixed interests. Now that was part one of this particular discussion that we've got here. Reason being is that there's a little bit of an exclaimer in my literature here that highlights the name for game theory, which in itself is obviously a branch of studies, that may be somewhat identified as a misnomer. When you look at game theory, it probably highlights to you that it is a misnomer. And when you go and read up what the word misnomer means, misnomer is that the name or the label of the thing does not coincide with the activity that it's associated to. Game theory generally does not share the fun or the frivolity associated with games. Because when you look at the word game implies enjoyment, relaxation, entertainment. However, the studies itself, this branch of studies, actually looks at international relations and the possible occurrence of wars who have vested interests. Now, as I said a little bit earlier in our discussion, back in 2024, I didn't think much of Jeffrey Sachs's particular, his pinpointing of the strategy, where the strategy emanates from in the United States foreign policy development scenario, because he obviously finished that one sentence as a statement to say they're using game theory, and the reasoning that they are applying is that they are trying to identify interests that they can interfere with of other countries around the world in order to do or to get one or other particular strategic advantage. And he highlighted specifically the way this game theory is being developed is that it is developed in a sense sort of as to cite that certain particular things will happen if they, as the United States, do certain particular actions. But. We get into the most, well, probably more accurate than Nostradamus himself. We get into the discussion that Professor Jiang Shuijin had highlighted back in his 2024 class, because he gives online lessons his lectures are online, specifically about game theory, which he teaches. It's under the channel of predictive history. That's what it calls itself, meaning predicting what actions would come. And he was recently interviewed online by one of the YouTube news channels that exists there, known as Breaking Point, where Professor Chiang was asked in terms of, you know, he made these predictions and how, you know, how has he seen these predictions come to fruition? And he mentioned Chiang specifically, and this is the scary part, guys. No one. If you've gone and look at the main news outlets of CNN, BBC, and the other, and probably Al Jazeera even, none of them have actually interviewed this guy, and none of them have identified where this strategy for this conflict has come about. None of them. None of them have identified where did the Americans get this particular idea to attack Iran. None of them got it. None of them are talking about it. None of them have identified, is there a document somewhere that mentions this particular thing? They would go and interview an expert to give them an answer. They would go and talk to a professor here, a researcher there, this there. But none of them cited the specific developments of how things have happened. Now, the funny thing is, back on Wednesday, I decided to watch the episode of Professor Chiang's Predictive History, this channel, Predictive History, that has all Professor Chiang's game theory lectures on it, and he highlighted it, and his analysis is actually supporting the hypothesis that Jeffrey Sachs, John Mearsheimer, Yanis Varoufakis, who's also an economist, economist individual as well. Professor Chiang's lecture supports the wording that I've been hearing for the past 2 years. That specifically what you're seeing, that this is the actions of a dying empire. This is as the empire is, you know, struggling to do something, struggling to save or to hold on to some sort of an empire-based approach. Now, I'll mention to you, and I'll mention them right now so that I can get them over and done with, the following steps that are currently happening and the particular manners in terms of which what you see this year, how it has transpired. If you guys remember back from Donald Trump's first term, he was the US president that walked away from the Iran nuclear deal. France was a party to it, the EU was a party to it, the UK was a party to it, and there was a fourth player, I think. Yeah, and Iran was the fifth player. But the other three entities, France, the UK, and the EU, were sort of like guarantors of this particular agreement. The anomaly, I call him the anomaly, but the anomaly, or even the variable that no one accounted for in international relations analysis, was Israel. No one accounted for them in that particular talking point. Why? Because there's another thing that Jeffrey Sachs also mentioned specifically, that there was a dedicated strategy that he had heard about that targeted the strong men of the Middle East in order to pacify the strong men, the strongman nations of the Middle East, in favor of Israel's particular security. So who are we talking about? It was Gaddafi from Libya. It was Bashar al-Assad from Syria. It was Saddam Hussein from Iraq. There was another country that I keep forgetting about. Obviously, the main goal was Iran, or is Iran, number four. And that the whole discussion was meant to destabilize those other countries in order to provide safety for Israel. Sachs himself mentioned this. I can quote it. And he has been saying this for the past 3 years, actually, since 2023 to 2024 to 2025. I haven't watched any Jeffrey Sachs discussions yet because, you know, you sometimes can't predict. He will still reference the same thing, but in this year, I haven't watched anything from Jeffrey Sachs yet. But he highlighted this particular strategy. Donald Trump comes through in his first term. He walks away from that Iran nuclear deal, where the other three participants, France, the UK, and the EU, were asking, "What are you doing? Why are you walking away? We have an opportunity to closely monitor the Iran nuclear development program by utilizing the International Atomic Energy Agency's capabilities to have access directly to the Iranian sites and primarily to observe and to literally give us direct reporting feedback." Donald Trump just walked away summarily, making accusations obviously to Iran, calling them, you know, that they want the death of the United States and of Israel. And yeah, obviously, I mean, the Iranians themselves have not, you know, showered themselves in any glory with the rhetoric that they've had before, even though they were trying to request to develop a, you know, humanitarian-based nuclear program, obviously for nuclear power generation. But, you know, the rhetoric was still there. Then comes Donald Trump's election campaigning, 2024, during 2024. And he made it specific. Firstly, the aim was now this new assertion, obviously, of trying to reposition the United States as this only hegemon and global power, the only one that should be considered. Firstly, citing that he will start a war with Iran, which we saw last year. The introduction was last year. The teaser of this conflict was last year. Second scenario, the reactions that Iran will have, which we did not hear of, obviously, from the other analyses coming through, but that Professor Chang had cited, meaning the reactions that Iran will have when this conflict actually occurs. And lastly, primarily, what will happen? Now, the game theory analysis that I'm giving you is focusing primarily squarely on the Iran conflict. Everything else outside of it, meaning the targeting of China through trade sanctions and trade rhetoric, is also part of the particular game. Many people have feared that the conflict would actually be against China, because how this particular conflict happened was a little bit weird, being that the conflict itself caught the Americans off guard. And it was the Omanis or the Qataris, one of the two, or the Bahrainis, who were negotiating, who were part of the negotiating process for peace between the Iranians and the Americans in the Middle East, literally the day before, the Friday night before the Israelis fired the rockets, because it has been proven it was the Israelis firing who fired the first shot, not the Americans. The Israelis were the first one to fire a rocket. The discussion there was, what you can see primarily is that the parties were supposedly acting in good faith to the negotiation process. Now remember, this was negotiations between the US and Iran, not Israel and Iran. The US and Iran. And the mediation was taking place there in the Middle East, in a hotel. High level as it was, specifically that the mediating parties were saying, we are close to a deal, a historic deal, a historic negotiation process to possibly achieve a cool down of relations between the United States and Iran. That was the Thursday or the Friday night, one of the 2 days. That was the Thursday or the Friday night. You can still find that interview on Al Jazeera, the mediator, where he literally said, we are close to a deal. We are close to some sort of a truce in terms of relations between the two countries. Literally the next morning, Iran gets attacked. Now, that sounds very, very similar to what happened last year with the 12-day war. Where I also noted, where I also said the reason for the 12-day war was because of the International Atomic Energy Agency's press conference that took place the Tuesday, that I sat there watching. And the only journalist in that room that asked anything about Iran, because the conference didn't have like a description of what it was about. The conference just literally began, this is, we just came back and we had negotiations with the Iranians and XYZ and XYZ. And then an American journalist asks the weirdest question that you would ever hear in your life, guys. Is it true that the Iranians are sitting with documents that they're not supposed to sit with? And when that question was asked, the next morning, you and I are hearing the start of a conflict campaign. That was 2025's scenario. Same thing happened again this year. It had to be a TV interview with one of the mediating officials who is from the mediating parties that kicks off this latest round. Now, game theory and the game theory analysis that Jiang provided, because I'm not going to talk about what Jiang also predicts. I'll keep that a secret for the homeland discussion, because Helmut and I, we've already slotted this in for tomorrow's discussion regarding this conflict, because there are some serious economic reverberations that we're going to experience. Unfortunately, guys, we might face up to a $10 increase on our petrol per liter and diesel per liter. We might. I say we might. Some of the local publications here in the country have highlighted a $4.50. I doubt it'll be $4. I expect it to be close to the $10 mark. The increase, the petrol price increase, which obviously would be catastrophic for the Namibian economy, because this would be severe inflationary reactions. And that's the unfortunate thing. Now, the weird thing about game theory has been that it is applied to a wide variety of situations in which the choices of players interact in order to affect the outcome. So think about chess, but you're not playing chess. But you can see that it's probably based upon chess, because I can read chess when I you know, did the reading about game theory in this discussion, for this discussion. I could read that these two, that this economist and this mathematician were thinking about it in a chess manner. But here's the thing with chess. Chess has a set playing surface with set rules. You are restricted. You are restricted. That's what many people don't understand also about chess. Chess is just that board. You don't go anywhere past that board. You, and each of the pieces have limited movement action. In stressing the strategic aspects of decision making, or the aspects controlled by the players, rather than by pure chance, meaning you obviously try to identify the interests, you obviously try to identify the possible impacts associated to these interests and the possible reactions that could emanate from these interests. Because they cannot be put by pure chance, which is true. They cannot be by pure chance, meaning it's not, an unpredictable event that just happens. Or pure, well, in some cases in Namibia, we would call it witchcraft, you know, possibly that someone has it in for you or someone has some sort of a grudge against you. No. If there is a grudge, you have to identify what you did. Because you possibly, you know, did something, committed something, or said something, or acted in one way or another. Now, since the aspects that are controlled by the players, or the aspects associated to the strategic decision making by the players, is not based upon pure chance, the theory both supplements and goes beyond the classical theory of probability. Because in probability, because you would also identify, if you've ever done probability when you hear about game theory, is the probability would identify what is the probability that X attacks Y. Or the probability that Y goes and attacks W, or Y has a relationship with Z. You can obviously see why game theory sounds pretty close to probability, because probability asks because game theory would ask you a probability question, a hypothesis. What is the hypothesis that this could occur? This particular scenario could occur. Now, game theory has been used, for example, to determine what political coalitions or business conglomerates are likely to form, the optimal price at which to sell products or services in the face of competition, and also the power of a voter or a block of voters, whom to select for a jury, the best site for manufacturing plant, and the behavior of certain animals and plants in their struggle for survival. Game theory also has even been used to challenge the legality of certain voting systems. Now, it would also be surprising if any one theory could address such an enormous range of games. And in fact, there is no single game theory. There's actually a whole bunch of them, just to be honest, guys. A number of these theories have been proposed, each applicable to different situation, and each with its own concepts of what constitutes a solution. Now, there's also a scenario to look at. You have simple particular game theories, which discusses these different theories that exist, and others that outline the principles underlying game theory. There's also additional concepts and methods that can be used also to analyze and to solve decision-making problems or decision problems that obviously highlight a different perspective as well. But before we continue, guys, we'll quickly take a short musical break. And after the musical break, we come back as we are close to the midway point of this morning's session of My Sunday Morning Take. Stay tuned. We'll be back right after this.
Thank you. this is energy, a never-ending symphony, echoing in time. Then, baby, in your eyes I wanna stay, reflecting what I want to say. Now I see my crimes. If all it is a losing streak, a life just full of misery, I think I understand. But baby, within you I can feel the dream, a never-ending frequency. Oh, the sound sublime. And in time you might find another reason, find another reason to live. I'm on your side, so let's find another reason, find another reason to live. Gethsemane, a wondrous morning this shall be. Don't you feel divine? And baby, the miracles that come so fast, and you are passing every test with the magic in your mind. And in time to me. The crystal waters running free, the mountains of your soul. Baby, the words are flowing out of me, an endless page of psalm to sing, something to delight. Honey, if all of this is energy, never-ending frequency, echoing in time. Baby, the cave is where I need to be, and I can come out again wherever I like. Baby,
Debbie's from the corner store, car bruises at Hillside. Drinking that fruit punch on a Saturday. Brandon dancing on the front porch, his big brother was George. He'd always borrow my tapes and lose them things. Going down to the community center, rock, paper, scissors, 'cause you know the winner would be the first to play Nintendo 64. In the summertime, on the south side, it's alright. In the summertime, on the south side, it's just fine. In Panther City, in Panther City. All the crackheads and prostitutes on Rosedale, my father said go straight home. Oh, I can't help. Don't walk around them streets at night. There was a girl, she lived on Pinky Street, her name was Jamie. I used to drive our house every day. That was my first taste of love. In the summertime, on the south side, alright. In the summertime, on the south side, it's just fine. In Panther City, in Panther City, myself and feel something. To remind myself and feel something. In the summertime, on the south side, it's alright. In the summertime, yeah, 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 yeah. In the summertime, it's alright. In the summertime, on the south side. In the summertime, sometimes I go back there in my mind. It's alright. It's alright. It's alright. Sometimes I just wanna feel, yeah.
So, obviously from the Mellow Tunes there from Leon Bridges now with the song that you just heard, Panther City. I almost said Summertime because I kept hearing Summertime most of the lyrics that he just, you know, recited there. And before that, it was Richard Ashcroft with the song Find Another Reason. So, it brings us up just past the midway point, and as we're heading into the second half of the second half of this morning's program, as you're in my company from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m., almost at 6 a.m. And if you've just woken up, dear listeners, good morning, welcome, welcome. I do hope that you at least have a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or whatever it is that you call something that is a, you know, sort of like a morning brew in some way or another, non-alcoholic, hopefully. But if you're of that particular designation, go strong with a little bit of consideration, obviously, or moderation, should I rather say.
Now, the scenario that ultimately is playing out in the Middle East is one where in the analysis, which I'm also basing much of this conversation on, which comes through from Professor Jiang's particular digital lecture that I watched. And I watched the second one, the follow-on chapter after that, or the chapter right immediately after that, which was the reactions or the avenues for reaction open to Iran, was a discussion primarily where we could see this war happening. Now, game theory in its own scenario can also be identified as games that can be classified according to certain significant features, the most obvious of which is the number of players. This means that a game can be designated as being a one person, a two person, or an N person, with N being greater than two game, with games in each category having their own distinctive features. On top of this, a player does not have to be an individual. It may be a nation, a corporation, or a team that comprises of many people with shared interests. Now, in games of perfect information, such as chess, which is also restrictive in its own scenario, each player knows everything about the game at all times. Poker, on the other hand, is an example of a game of imperfect information, because players do not know all of their players' cards or what they've actually got going for them, because poker is also a scenario of bluffing, which I have observed. In many cases, that's why you'll sometimes see with the World Poker Series, if there is anyone that ever watches that thing online or on TV, is that the World Poker Series, you sometimes see the poker players wearing, guess what? Sunglasses. Or, some sort of a thing that obscures their eyes in a way. And this is the particular interesting scenario, because the discussion obviously is based upon trying to find out what your other opponents have against you. And in poker, you're playing literally not just against the house, but you're also playing against the other players. So this means it's an nth game specifically, that theory that has to be applied. But that is all good and well, because poker is technically gambling, and chess is technically about strategic entertainment, because, it's a game of the mind. The weird thing is, we've all seen the international relations or the foreign policy that came out of the United States. We did the particular analysis based upon the just right after 3 January about the security, the national security policy that the United States had brought out last year. We saw that particular document. That document in its own right also stated that this is the path that, will be walked to this particular conflict. The biggest concern has been what we've not noticed, what would happen to the price of oil or the price of fuels around the world, primarily regarding the sudden spike and the attack on Iran. Now, I thought Saudi Arabia was the biggest oil producer after. I said I thought. Fair mistake to make. I thought Saudi Arabia was the largest producer outside of the sanctioned nation of Venezuela and Russia. Just to realize that after said particular actions that happened since 2022 against Russia after its attack on Ukraine and what happened, what has been happening to Venezuela for the past 10 years, and the obvious, you know, the obvious destabilization of Libya, the obvious destabilization of Syria, the obvious destabilization of Iraq that had taken place in 2003, which are all oil producing countries, mind you, that the latest round of destabilization, which is the attack on Iran, is what does this actually mean? And if you did not know, Iran actually had become the sort of like largest oil producer of the oil producing nations who are still left, because Russia's ghost fleet of oil tankers is, you know, obviously one of the pains that the supposed sanctions were trying to address, but these oil tankers are just everywhere. These ghost fleets, they call them ghost fleets. These oil tankers are everywhere and they're delivering oil everywhere. Now, one thing has popped up that makes things a little bit weird. Yes, we saw back in last year the historic meeting between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin in Alaska, which was a particular interesting thing to happen because it's not a particular action that actually led to a discussion of sort of like achieving peace in Ukraine, because it's not. And it has also led specifically to further destabilization within NATO. Until obviously start of this year, back in last month, February, when Marco Rubio showed up at the Munich Security Conference, and we've analyzed the Munich Security Conference as well, because the thing that Rubio went and said was literally, Europe should be proud of its colonial history and its dominance and subjugation of other parts of the world, and for spreading Christianity wherever it went, and for owning or for basically causing the particular negative impacts it has caused, which Europe still has not fully paid for, not even in a Namibian context yet. And we are sitting with this particular scenario of what Rubio did last month, and the conflict itself kicks off. End of last month. Literally end of last month. Now, players in constant sum games have completely opposed interests, whereas in variable sum games, they may all be winners or losers. In a labor management dispute, for example, the two parties certainly have some conflicting interests, but both will benefit if a strike is avoided or averted. A variable sum game can be further distinguished as being either cooperative or non-cooperative. In cooperative ones, players can communicate and, most importantly, make binding agreements. And in non-cooperative games, players may communicate but cannot make binding agreements, such as an enforceable contract. Now, one of the weirdest things that you obviously would have seen in this discussion so far, has been that Iran has had the opportunity and the possibility of being interviewed on international TV. The Iranian foreign minister has been interviewed on an American platform. The Iranian foreign minister has been interviewed on a British platform. on the British platform, I think it's the BBC, he cited specifically that Iran is not at war with the UK, which is a little bit of a misguiding statement to make, because he could, the Foreign Minister Larijani could obviously make that statement, primarily because it was the British that interfered in Iranian affairs back in 1953. It was the British that interfered in conjunction with the Americans in the the Tehran crisis. They call it the Tehran or the American embassy crisis, because it was once again the British and the Americans that interfered in Iranian internal affairs back then, because they helped to install the Shah, who is making statements outside of, who's making statements from the United States. That's now the, I think the son of the previous Shah is making statements from the United States. And the reason why the previous Shah was unsuccessful was because this man was brutal. He brought in a police state and he started clamping down on people. And, you know, there was literally civil unrest happening in his country. And then it was the Americans that literally gave rise to a very small political entity. If you guys go and read up the modern history of Iran from Mohammad Mossadegh, you will realize that the idea of a Muslim republic was a very, very, or is Islamic republic, as they call it, not Muslim, Islamic republic, it's the term they use, the Iranians, is that the idea of this religion-led governance structure for Iran was, these political actors were a very small minority in the 70s. A very small minority. And it's once again the British and the Americans that helped the wrong guy that leads to them literally being enemies today. And then there's the other particular weird scenario that happened in the 1980s when Iran and Iraq had a war. And it was the Americans that gave chemical weapons to Saddam Hussein, which is a breach of international law, because you may not use chemical weapons in warfare. It's a war crime. And Saddam Hussein used those chemical weapons, the exact chemical weapons that Saddam Hussein was being accused of when he was invaded in 2003. Or was it 2002? Take your pick. Now, when we obviously look at what game theory applies in here, you don't see the game theory from the examples I've just given you, but you do see the game theory specifically when Jung cited how this conflict would happen. Firstly, Donald Trump has publicly said in his campaign, his political campaigning, he will invade, or he will attack, or he will instigate some sort of a conflict against Iran. So we knew that was going to happen. We knew it. But in the same time, he kept saying that he's going to be the US president to end all wars. Now, the two statements cannot work together. In reality, you cannot contradict yourself in either direction. You cannot make yourself look like a fool or a liar in either direction, because you have to maintain one of the two policies. Let me say it again. You have to maintain one of the two policies. Now, as I said, obviously, we've been seeing a lot of optics, being a lot of press conferences, a lot of engagements with media personnel, a lot of talking points coming about from Well, many of the international or the Western-based journalists are fixated on the things that Donald Trump is saying. You know, like some of the contradictory statements he makes, in some cases, nonsensical statements that he makes just to make it for the sake of making us, of saying something. Or in some scenarios, you know, he's just literally sort of like throwing further fuel on flames. And obviously all of this is not clear. Now, here's been the biggest concern so far has been what Professor Chung's, if I can call it his prediction has highlighted. Now, the prediction is as follows. The US, Donald Trump will announce that he will go to war. Then they will go to war. Then we will see some sort of a retaliation by Iran, and the retaliation will be to the Middle East, will be in the Middle East, and it will be to all those other countries that you've seen so far being attacked. Bahrain. I think Qatar is the only one that has not been struck so far, but I think they have been struck. But let's work under the assumption that they've been struck, because there is an American base there as well. So it's Bahrain, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, Qatar. Obviously Israel was the other party that was also struck. And then Iraq, and then I think Syria was also struck. No, Syria was not struck. And all of these particular scenarios, all of these particular countries, which also form part of that other body that you don't hear much about, the GCC, is that all of them had some sort of peaceful relations with Iran, but they all have American bases within them, which sounds very similar to the thing that the Russians did not like, specifically with regards to the discussion about Ukraine joining NATO. Now, the reaction has happened, which was one of the predictions that Professor Chung has outlined. Meaning, we've seen step one, prediction one, United States or Donald Trump announcing that he is going to go to war with Iran in his campaigning, his political campaigning for president back in 2024. That he will pursue a conflict. We've been seeing this since 2025 last year. That he will start this war, which he did. Iran will retaliate, which we've seen. And the retaliation and the firing and all those particular moves are still happening. The next phase that people, that we have to look out for, dear listeners, and this is the most critical phase and the most scariest part ever. Why do I say this is the most scariest part ever? Because this is going to be the ugliest of the parts. We have to look for any indication of whether or not the United States will send an invasion force. Now here's the scary part. Already, 5,000 US Marines have been relocated from the Japanese base, to where the conflict zone is currently. I will say it again. News has come out that 5,000 US Marines have been moved from Japan to the Middle East. The 5,000 Marines were held there, supposedly, to try and be a deterrent to China, who primarily, obviously, has said, and the rest of the world, including the United States, back in the 1980s, has agreed to this policy, the One China policy. If you don't know what that is, go read up about it. The One China policy speaks of a united Taiwan and China in this regard, in this particular scenario. The Americans have begun moving surface-to-air missile defense systems from South Korea. And now Kim Jong-un is busy doing his, you know, missile testing situation, because as those surface-to-air missile infrastructure is being moved from South Korea, now the American and Korean navies are busy, and South Korean navies are busy doing some sort of military drills there in the neighborhood. For South, you know, to sort of like tell North Korea, hey, listen, hey, we are still here. But you are constantly hearing every week a new military asset of the United States is being relocated to the Middle East. The Americans now have access to that that naval base or that military base by the British in Cyprus, in the Mediterranean. And as everything obviously is still unfolding as we're sitting here and as we are listening, the reality of an invasion force being sent to Iran is looking more likely. Now, I was hoping Jiang would be wrong. Guys, I was hoping Jiang would be wrong. Jiang has not been wrong. And this is why I called this next particular phase in the discussion of game theory the scariest part of his predictions. The moment the United States sends an invasion force, it will have to be a big invasion force, because they can't send 5,000 Marines. It's a country of 90 million people, Iran. Or 90 plus million people. The Iranian Revolutionary Guard is about apparently 100,000+, or no, 300,000. They're like 300,000 already. Then there's still the regular Iranian army, which is also apparently like 200,000 already. The United States has a standing army of 100,000+. And that the American army or the American military has reformed its particular, what do they call it? Its doctrine, its military doctrine since 2000. Its military doctrine since 2000 has been scaled down in your army, and your strategies have to be based upon shock and awe, meaning you hit hard, you hit fast, and you end the conflict as quick as possible. Instead of have a big army, go in for a long fight, have structured and well-supplied supply lines, and have strong, sort of like a strong presence of boots on the ground scenario, like what we've seen, which conflict had such a particular scenario? Which was the last Gulf War. Not the one of Saddam being invaded. That was a 2-week war. The previous Gulf War, the one of 1990 to 1991. That Gulf War. Because Jiang also cited the military doctrine of the US. Currently we're seeing that they're, with the missiles just flying everywhere, they're trying to maintain the shock and awe. They're trying to maintain the, we're going to bombard you into submission. But it has recently come out as well, the Americans have developed missile systems on and defense systems that are unsustainable in cost alone. If it's not just one missile or one rocket that is millions, that costs millions, ridiculous amounts of money, then the system that has to guide the rocket is a couple of billion. The other system that has to shoot down, the interceptor system, is a couple of 100 million. And the rocket that it fires is a couple of million. Whereas the Iranians are using drones, develop their own internal arsenal and ammunition, and they're currently fighting, and they're currently bombing. Now what you're seeing here in the realm of game theory is primarily that we've got end game players, And we've primarily got a scenario where things are predictable and going to move in a predictable sense. But before we continue, we've got a short ad break. We'll come back right after that.
Choose driving sober over driving intoxicated. Choose to obey speed limits over speeding. Choose to use pedestrian crossings over crossing just anyway. And choose to replace worn-out tires over pinching pennies. Choose to do the right thing on our roads and save lives.
This message was brought to you by the National Road Safety Council.
Inspiration hard to find. Across the Rio Grande. Take me to your city lights. Out by the riverside. I know you understand. Play me something down tempo. Low key and rock steady. Body heating like Kimbo. Falling for you like confetti. More whiskey and ginger. Love, I'm just a beginner. What if I stayed in the riddle? Just one more night. Just one more night. I know a girl with a diamond crown. Grew up in a border town. Took me to an empty dive. Such a pretty silhouette. Show me how to two-step. She brings me back to life. Play me something down tempo. Low-key and rock-steady. Body hitting like Kimbo. Falling for you like confetti. More whiskey and ginger. Love, I'm just a beginner. What if I stayed in the middle? Just one more night. Just one more night. Tempo, low key and rock steady. Body hitting like Kimbo. Falling for you like confetti. No whiskey and ginger. Love, I'm just a beginner. What if I stayed in the middle? Just one more night. Low key, you're rock steady.
We come back there from the mellow particular sounds there of Till Bronner with the song La Donna Invisible, or Invisible, for that matter. And before that, you heard a little bit of Laredo from Leon Bridges once again. Heading into the last quarter of this morning's session, and once again, if you're just waking up, good morning, good morning, good morning. Hope you've got a little bit of a, you know, like a wake-up drink for your breakfast situation going for you. This is obviously as we see the first rays of light, wherever you find yourself popping up, and yeah, enjoying the particular morning as it obviously aims to wake us all up and get us into the motions of what we call the Sunday morning session. Now, game theory, just to share something with you from, just to say, share something from you from a, international relations perspective in terms of how it was also, you know, being cited in one or other way, has a particular, let me just enlarge this thing. Well, okay. So, if we've got the opportunity of looking at what game theory has to highlight primarily, it is that in some particular scenarios, and this is obviously as some particular international relations theories that draw on mathematical models of decision making in a formal manner demonstrates individualism and the rational actor assumption in some scenarios. Or in most scenarios, these examples of decision decision theory, which focuses on decision makers, and game theory, which focuses on small groups of actors interacting strategically, in terms of with each other. Now, one particular aspect in terms of how you can view this particular development across the world, and as obviously as it's further and unraveling even further, is what it primarily also aims to achieve. Now, the aim that you probably would have heard in the past 2 weeks from the Americans would be regime change, no regime change, regime change, no regime change, boots on the ground. We don't know if it's going to be boots on the ground, and we don't know if it's going to be boots on the ground, and we will bomb to smithereens. That is the rhetoric that you've been hearing so far. If you are trying to pay attention to anything that, what's his name, Pete Hegseth is saying, he's actually performing. He's actually doing a public relations performance. That guy was actually a former Fox News TV presenter or anchor. Which is a little bit weird, because obviously, you know, he's trying to sort of like do the same kind of sort of like dramatic performance situation there when he gives his press conferences. Now, the particular piece of literature I've got here in front of me, it's a book from, the International Relations Perspective, cites that in line with these particular ontological assumptions, international relations theories assuming rational actors ultimately explain outcomes in international politics in terms of individual actors as rational actions. Depending on the particular actors assumed to be relevant for international relations, and these could be individual actors from a state's society, as is the case in liberal theory, or unitary states, as in neorealist theory. Different theories of international relations operate on the general assumption of general individual actors. This being, for example, that philosophy of science discussions become particularly relevant. Only a superficial difference arises between theories of international relations because they assume different actors to be relevant from a philosophy of science perspective. The theories are the same in terms of their underlying individualist ontology.
in the example of neorealist theory, as in many other theories of international relations, the state is theoretically treated as an individual. It assumes this, that the state is a unitary actor, which is analogous to an individual with a rational state interest and engaged in rational interaction with other states, as individual actors do. And you can primarily find such state individualism in many international relations theories. This being that when you go and look at the events, obviously, and, you know, in your own scenario and in your own particular aspect of looking at international relations and game theory, is, and remember, with game theory identifies the interests or the interest zones or the focal points of interest. And the points of interest have to deal with who is interested in achieving what. So what you can see primarily what has happened since the start of Donald Trump's presidency of last year, the interest for Iran has been primarily still to achieve its, as it has said, its humanitarian nuclear program. Donald Trump has been vehemently against this. Israel has been against this. And they've continuously highlighted that if Iran continues with this particular development, they will instigate or they will initiate a conflict against Iran. We've seen it. We're now in a second version of this particular engagement, and we're obviously seeing the worst part of it, the bombing happening and the not so environmentally friendly actions persisting. And this is now where things also get a little bit weird, because I told you a little bit earlier, just before the musical break and the ad break that preceded the musical break as well, the single step that we all have to fear, besides obviously a $10 increase in the price of petrol and diesel, the single step we've all got to fear is an invasion force showing up in Iran. Why? Why am I saying that? Even though we should already fear what Iran is doing currently right now. Iran is busy targeting infrastructure in all those Arab nations around Iran. And it's not even about oil that Iran will target. Iran will target desalination plants, fresh water production plants in most of those Arab nations, because those Arab nations don't have surface water like Iran. They don't have surface water. And according to Professor Jiang, Iran is trying to damage and destroy the global economy. The global economy runs through the American economy. The global economy needs Kuwait, the UAE, Qatar, Bahrain, Oman, and Saudi Arabia to flush petrodollars through the United States economy. That is why Donald Trump went and pardoned Russian oil. That is why the International Energy Agency requested its member states, the largest member states in its membership portfolio, to release 400 million barrels of oil from strategic reserves across the world. Why are they doing this? To keep the international barrel price low. Because they know it will spike inflation. But the inflationary spike will already happen. We will already feel it. You can even apply game theory to the actions that your government takes and how this will impact you. Because everyone is already doing it against the actions of the United States and how it impacts the rest of the world. Another thing that I possibly foresaw would happen is that Iran is not going to attend the 2026 World Cup, which throws the 2026 World Cup into disrepute. And it's on no part the fault of Iran. In no part, it's the fault of Iran in this regard. Yes, Iran itself has also not been innocent in rhetoric and in actions that have persisted there in the Middle East. Because as you all know, Iran funds Hezbollah. Hezbollah assists the Palestinian resistance and the Palestinian, efforts. So in no particular scenario has Iran also been innocent in a way. And none of these state actors, these state individuals, have been innocent from day one. Since 1953. None of them have been innocent. Which includes the United Kingdom. Because in many cases, people think that you need to start, or how modern media theory works, is that you've got to start literally from, in some cases, they would tell you, yeah, start from 7 October 2022. Or, no, what? 2023. You go like, no, who starts from there? How do you start from there? The realm of international relations, guys, is a realm of looking back in history. Because you've got to analyze, how did we get here? How did we get here? And international relations is very cognizant of past actions, past interactions between state actors, of past particular events between countries and what happened there. This can be both negative and positive events. This can be both negative and positive interactions. International relations is not devoid of looking back or having the opportunity of looking back on it on itself and assessing what has happened before. When you obviously look at this particular play happening, once again, we as Africa, we are at the brunt of everything. We are going to face the brunt in this particular scenario, even though we didn't contribute to it in any manner or any way. The biggest concern for us is just that invasion force perspective. That particular invasion force perspective. I am slightly worried about it because I still don't see the purpose of modern warfare. But hey, I mean, we still have antagonizing parties and entities in the world who are creating issues for everyone else around the world. On that note, dear listeners, we're quickly taking a short musical break and we'll come back right after that, heading into saying our goodbyes. As we are about 9 minutes out from the top of the hour at 7 a.m. And we'll be back after this.
We come back there from the sounds there of Sade. I see I've got a phone call on the line. Let me quickly get it through. Eagle FM, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
How are you doing, Uncle Bona?
Good, my brother. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm all right.
How are you doing?
I'm a little bit worried, Uncle Bona, about this world of ours. But yeah, that's all I can say. How's your morning, Uncle Bona?
The same apply to me, my brother. I'm also worried. I'm completely confused. Completely, how do you say it in Afrikaans?
Dier Makar. Yeah. And you're not wrong, Uncle Bona. That is what we are all seeing. If you go and look at the news and the information, there is no clarity.
I'm now wondering, I didn't know that Trump has promised during his campaign, he has declared for the war already.
No, he didn't.
He didn't.
I actually forgot about it because even though you could see that he will come back as president because the Democrats, they didn't know what they were trying to achieve, and was the reason why Trump won the landslide elections. But the concern was, will he actually go through with his election campaign promises that he highlighted? And he is actually doing that, Uncle Bona.
No wonder why they wanted to kill him. Maybe those who wanted to kill him are the ones who were actually opposing his idea of going to war.
Maybe. But
I'm just trying to ponder around that area, that line. Because somebody to really just allow that person to go for war like that, I think it's just dangerous.
Mm.
And I don't know how we do. Now I was hearing here in yesterday, they know the Chinese and they want to us and they should come and help and clear that street.
Mm.
And the mining and things like that, all those warships that they are sending.
Mm.
Is this war not going to really draw other countries in, apart from the ones that are already assisting him?
No, it is, Uncle Bona. The biggest issue here is that we have to fear the invasion force, if there is going to be an invasion force, but it looks like it is going to happen. An invasion force in Iran, because it'll be ugly.
It's going to be ugly.
It'll be an ugly war, because the one thing that that we are seeing specifically from the propaganda happening right now from the Americans is that apparently the Iranians want regime change. But no one can give evidence. They only cite the Iranians that live in the diaspora, who are happy.
Okay.
But the diaspora are not 90 million, Uncle Bona. Uncle Bona, just hold on for me. We've got a quick ad.
Okay.
If you lost your show, all of Taliko Tungupo. Oma wa o tomono okujako NHP. Genge wa longi fa longi foli li pedulo wa wo haku. Olo halipiti kwa efiku ne fiku. Mefiloshi shelo haku oe. Owa washimali wa osha kupako. Washika we delwa komto alando ako. Kashi, koma punglo e na shano unjolo welewe. Oto dulo okulongi fa oma wa oe. Wa hupuko, opouna miti toshiningi momikalo dihapungashi. Okufuti lapo oimali wa ishona. Oyo hodulo okupolwa. Ulifutila ove mwene, omayakulo olu hapu, hakala ina kwa telwa, mowawe kwa folo elu unamiti. Ile, otojulu no kuli, okupitifapo e mwedidonumba, tokala inofuta eakulo lo elu unamiti. Kowyalele uhapu, talela po nhp.com.na. Emango no malandola fano ododina okulandulwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Uncle Bona, you've got like a minute extra. Sorry about that.
No problem. So, it's fine. So all we are saying is our prayer that that war will end soon. And I don't know now, the Americans, they are also calling others to join them and help them. I don't know how viable that will be. Because the people who is calling now and is buying now, the Russian oil, and other people are complaining again. The other countries are complaining. Why is it buying now
Russian oil?
Russian oil and things like that.
Yeah.
I don't know how the situation is turning around.
It's firstly filled with a lot of hypocrisy, Angabona, and secondly, the Americans are still reinforcing what everyone has been saying since last year. They are now looking like the most unpredictable and most unreliable entity in the world. But if you look to other countries, let's say the EU, Russia, China, and I'm not talking from Namibia's perspective, what we've seen. Angabona, did you see back on Friday, or did you hear that Namibia and Russia has concluded a business forum? So we are advancing international relations with Russia. China is obviously at an advanced level with Namibia. The EU is steamrolling forward in terms of advancing its international relations with Namibia, and the Europeans are pushing for industrial reform in the format of that renewable energy. It's moving away completely from fossil fuels. So America is pushing for fossil fuels. The Russians are pushing for fossil fuels.
Yes.
And we have to find ourselves in this particular arm struggle of these large entities in terms of what are their actual aims in the realm of international relations.
It's a difficult. So now, maybe whoever now want to get into agreement with the Russians and the Chinese and all these things, so that means the Americans are not happy with them.
No, they're not. Because they've lost advantage, you know, strategic advantage.
Okay.
And now they wish to get back into that strategic advantage scenario as well. That's also why you see Angabona, the American ambassador here in Namibia, decided to what did he do? He went most to Cape Town to the mining in Durban, or what was it? The Africa Energy in Durban, that thing that was there in Cape. There were two things in Cape Town.
In Durban, this energy, all those in Durban have been taking place.
And then he was the moderator on a panel discussion, which included our Deputy Minister of Mines and Energy, Deputy Minister Gudensia Kroona. And I sat there going like, it's a what's going on here? How does the ambassador from Namibia go and be a moderator of a discussion in South Africa where one of our leaders are, and it's based upon in the realm of oil and gas? And then when he came back, he went and gave a tour with American oil executives of what's there in Walvis, specifically regarding the developments around oil and gas. And I still want to know how Walvis will play a part, because here's the thing, Angabona. The oil exploration is not opposite from Walvis. It's opposite from Lüderitz.
Yeah.
Someone still needs to explain to me from government, why are we fixated on Walvis? What's Walvis's role in what's happening in Lüderitz?
So let's open our eyes and see how God will help us to intervene. Otherwise, the conflict will spill around all over the whole world.
Angabona, it will spill over.
So, my brother, thank you very much. I know you are always giving us space when you are alone. But whenever you team up with a comedian, that becomes a different story. But never mind his conservative ideas.
Angabona, you should be glad he's still asleep, ne? Because if he heard that comment.
So thank you very much. Have a nice day, my brother.
You too, Angabona. Enjoy the rest of the morning.
God bless.
Bye-bye.
God bless.
Now, I know I've appropriated a good 6-7 minutes, but obviously in for good reason. That does bring us up to the end of our discussion this morning, guys, here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. Our sort of like the takeaway that you can have from this morning's discussion is that we are in another precarious time period of human history, being that we don't know where this conflict will turn out. We don't know which direction it could take. The possibility is still there that the game theory lecturer that I mentioned at the start, Professor Zhang Shui-Qin, who is a game theory expert, that's all he analyzes, not even international relations. So far, his predictions are on course. And the course that we see happening is that a land invasion by the Americans, not even by the Israelis, by the Americans. That is the unfortunate prediction, the unfortunate concern. So far, he has been correct up until the point of the retaliation to all the other Gulf countries, all the other Arabic countries around Iran, that Iran retaliated to those countries. The concern is just the step after this retaliation. Because you can clearly see that the Iranians are defiant, and you can clearly see this is annoying the Americans and the Israelis. The Americans are not giving a strategy to their country. They did not even give an adequate reason to the United Nations Security Council. They did not motivate to their own oversight powers of legislation, meaning it is in international law, it is a war crime that the Americans committed, because they didn't give advanced warning and they didn't cite or they didn't pursue avenues of trying to restore relations. And secondly, is they also didn't inform, nor did they give notice to their own legislative places that they were going to enter a state of war against Iran. Those are the facts, guys. And that's going to make things scary for the next coming week from today heading forward. On that note, this has been my Sunday morning take here on the number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. Enjoy the rest of your programming in our company to come on after the break, or the short musical break, and then obviously the ads. Stay tuned for the next program to follow on immediately.